We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. Or visit preborn.com.
The feature-length documentary Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency, premiering November 11th, chronicles the life and ministry of Don Wildman. It takes you through the founding of the National Federation for Decency, what has become AFA. It's a call to stand firm for righteousness and shows how that resolve can make a huge difference in our world.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
Find out more and watch the trailer at culturewarrior.movie.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
They basically want to kill me because I'm stopping their fraud, and they want to hurt Tesla because we're stopping this terrible waste and corruption in the government.
Good morning and welcome to Jenna Ellis in the Morning. It is Thursday, March 20th, and that was Elon Musk describing all of the leftist threats against Tesla. And it's not just a matter of going after their stock. It's not just a matter of saying, hey, we don't like Elon, or even targeting him and the Trump administration with lawfare. This is going well beyond that, with all of the vandalism against Tesla, the king of the cars, fires at various locations. And this also coming as the Daily Mail is reporting terrifying threats against conservatives, and specifically a conservative influencer and his family. This is my friend Robbie Starbuck, and he detailed in an interview on Wednesday how he, his four children, and his wife have been threatened and had their address doxed. He said, quote, a crazy person showed up at our house and banged on the door when my kids were home and I wasn't home, he recalled. He added, someone shipped mail to our house that required a hazmat team to come out. I'm still not able to say everything that was in it, but there's an open investigation to find who sent the stuff that was sent. So this also, as several other prominent online conservative influencers have said on X in recent days, that they've been swatted, which is the practice of calling the police and filing a false report and basically having the SWAT team show up at someone's residence for purposes of fear, intimidation, and possibly even shootings. I mean, thankfully, no one yet in these swattings recently has been hurt, but it's very, very dangerous, highly illegal. And this just shows the increasing violence of the left. This isn't America, where we can debate and disagree and have elections and vote and then support our president, who was not only duly elected by the Electoral College, but also even the popular vote this time. And so it just goes to show you that the ideology fundamentally of the left is un-American and it's unbiblical. So let's talk more about this with my good friend Steve Dace, who is a host at The Blaze. And Steve, this is a really dangerous trend, and it's really got to stop.
Indeed. And if you look at why Robbie would be targeted, it would be the work he's done getting major corporations to forego their DEI efforts, maybe even more because of the film him and his wife made in 2023 about the sexualization of our children, would absolutely put him on this kind of a radar. And we have seen these tactics from the Democratic Party before. They just didn't happen in our lifetime, Jenna. But if you stood up to the Democratic Party in the late 19th century, well into the early 20th century, when it was essentially a front in various parts of the country, it was essentially a front for the KKK. If you stood up to them and that wickedness, you know, you saw variations of these themes before. Now, what happened is that previous generations essentially drove that iteration of the Democratic Party into the ground. But it survived well into the second half of the 20th century. I mean, George Wallace was basically running as a front for the KKK well into the 1960s. So what's going to have to happen here is, in our time, we have to recognize a simple truth. We cannot share a country with this. You cannot. It will not share a country with you. So it doesn't matter whether you're willing to. It doesn't matter whether you think that's extreme. It doesn't matter whether you don't want to be the provocateur. It's coming after you. I mean, you just itemized several such examples. I mean, we went from Super Bowls where every commercial was an electric car no one was going to buy and even fewer could afford, to now let's destroy the electric car company, the biggest of them all, because he's cutting maybe 0.00006% of the government. All right, that's a level of fanaticism that a free Republican small r form of government cannot sustain. Similar to burning crosses in people's yards, you simply can't sustain that in a free society. So in our day, our charge is going to have to be this iteration of the Democratic Party, like the previous one that was a front for evils like racism, are going to have to be just driven from public view. So shamed, so annihilated, so defeated, so stigmatized that even if you wanted to harbor those views in private, you would not dare make them known in public. That's what's going to have to happen. Because similar to what you're seeing with the judges, Jenna, it won't stop until it is stopped.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right, Steve, that we're seeing also the ideology of the left, the true ideology, not what they pretend to stand for.
Correct.
That is coming out because, yeah, they have been saying, oh, go green, and they wanted to mandate EVs, basically mandate that you buy a Tesla or something similar, and now they're going and destroying the very thing that they said was going to save the world. I mean, we saw that hypocrisy on full display during COVID as well, when the people who wanted to ban plastic straws in California were wasting so much plastic on, you know, masks and other gear and right. All of that, when they thought that lives were at stake, but really more fundamentally, it wasn't so much that they cared about life, it was that they cared about control. And so what is this evidencing about what their true target is and the true ideology of what the left is actually trying to transform America into?
Excellent question. What the left understands that politics is about power, acquiring it and wielding it. The right has believed that politics is a process. No, the left understands politics is about acquiring and wielding power. And so the problem is they have the proper understanding of what the political process is about. The problem is they have it untethered from any form of godliness. And so essentially they are a demonic construct. It is power for the sake of power. It is, and everything the left does is about two things. And if your audience doesn't remember anything else I'm going to say in the time we're going to talk this morning, remember what I'm about to say right now. Whatever grants it more power and more control is what they are for. And that's why they can swap positions on electric cars in just a matter of a few years. This is how a college-educated white woman married to the same beta male for 25 years with five kids in the suburbs, believes she is more gay than Dave Rubin and blacker than Thomas Sowell. Okay. Whatever will grant more power and control, whatever talking point, whatever narrative. And see, you see this with the judges right now, for example, these Democrat judges. I mean, Trump has already faced more injunctions in the month of February than Joe Biden faced his entire presidency. That's the same Joe Biden who left the border wide open for drug traffickers and terrorists. And just incredible. More than the guy who colluded with big tech for unprecedented censorship, said you couldn't work at a company of major standing if you didn't allow yourself to be an onboarding human experiment for a toxic genetic serum. And Trump faced more injunctions in February than Biden faced his entire four years. In fact, Trump's been president 18% of the 21st century so far, Jenna. He's already faced about 70% of all injunctions against the U.S. presidency this century, and 92% of them came from Democrat-appointed judges. And that's how you get opinions like, if a child is dangling, if its cuticle of its pinky finger is dangling from its mom's uterus, he can still be killed, and it's called pro-choice. But a Venezuelan drug lord has more right to exist on American soil than that child does, okay? They come up with the outcome they want. It doesn't matter how vile, evil, or insane. And then they will concoct the process by which to, quote-unquote, make it legal, all right? And until we come to an understanding of this, you know, this is the classic bromide, don't quote laws to men with guns, all right? We're pouring over codexes of, I mean, dude, our own media is asking Trump, you wouldn't dare defy a federal court order. Please tell us you wouldn't. Meanwhile, their federal court orders, everybody named Jenna Ellis has to be naked on Thursday at 3 o'clock and break the internet. No restraint. They never ask their own side, how will you restrain yourselves? Never. And they're never going to, because it's about power and control. All right. So until we understand that they will take whatever position is required to take, all corporations are terrible, evil, and greedy, except for Pfizer, and they can do to me whatever they want. These positions are literally insane, but they take them because they grant them more power and control. And we have to finally come to understand on the right that politics is that is what it's about. Someone is going to be in charge. Something is going to be worshipped. Now, I don't know about everybody else within the sound of my voice, but I kind of like it when the righteous rule and the people rejoice. And I kind of like it when the one true God of the universe is the one the culture worships. So I kind of like culture wars when my side wins. So I won't violate God's laws. Like, I have to love my neighbor as I love myself. So I'll defend even someone whose worldview I detest. I'll defend their right to self-defense. I'll defend their right to have a fair trial. I'll love my neighbor as I love myself, but I will do no more than that. And everything short of that, I will do to defeat you. And I will not go by some tradition of some unwritten code and some codex of subsection 23, okay, a provision 19, okay, because national reviews, opinion writers, so that's just how we do things here. I'm not doing any of that crap anymore, nor should anyone else if they want to still have a country when this is over.
Yeah, and well said. I mean, I think that it's so much more difficult to come from a position of restraint and trying to impose a spirit of the law, basically, on people who don't even care about the substance of the law.
Correct.
But where we draw the line with people who are clearly just out for power and they're willing to manipulate or completely distort and pervert any law and any outcome to get there, how do we move forward in that type of society when we are trying to have at least some restraint so that we can have a well-ordered society? I mean, I see this as a battle between calling for order versus utter and total chaos of the left.
We have to start with the premise of the world we're in and not the world we want to be in. All right. And so the world we're in, and every situation has to acknowledge these two things I said just a minute ago. Someone will always rule. Something will always be worshipped. Okay. You can't legislate morality. Wrong. That's the only thing you can legislate. And every piece of legislation is moral legislation, because someone will always rule and something must always be worshipped. All right. And so that means power is going to be wielded, whether we want to wield it or not. And at the time of Aragorn denying himself the sword because of he views himself through the prism of past generations is over. It is time for the return of the king here, metaphorically speaking. It is time for us to stop being Aragorns and refuse. And in fact, let me put it a different way. It is time for us to stop being Striders and refuse the sword to rule, and instead become Aragorn and take the sword. We have to be in power. And why? Precisely because we don't want it. And precisely because we recognize we're not the ultimate power. This is how you get limited government. You get limited government because you have people in power who recognize they are limited by their own sinfulness. They are limited by the sovereignty of God. That's why we took oaths and ended it with the term, so help me God, a subtle yet poignant reminder of these facts that I am restating right now that were lost in the last generation when the church was out selling Hawaiian shirts, sweater vests, and you know, making heretics best-selling authors via Zondervan. Okay? So we've got to come back to this now. You know, like Jack in my all-time favorite show, Lost, we have to go back. We have to go back. The answers to the future lie in the past. Okay? And so we have to go back and reset the order of things. And just to speak as a guy for a second, you know, every now and then, you know, one of the dumbest things the schools ever did was impose zero tolerance for violence. Dumbest thing. Because there's no law of the jungle. The bully, it's similar to the places that have, you can't bring your gun here. And that's always where the fanatics go and shoot people because they don't care about your signs. And we're the ones that obey. Similarly, in the schools, what happened is the bullies were like, oh, crap, you know, I was going to bully this kid for his lunch money and insult his mom. But then I read this sign, so I'm not going to do that. Of course, they don't do that. What happens is the other kid who would step in and interpose himself between the weak and the bully, now he won't do it because he's probably an athlete, doesn't want to get suspended, doesn't want to lose his place in the honor roll, a chance at a scholarship. So he backs off, he obeys, and the bully does his thing. The law of the jungle must be restated. There are some natural law things that we have among one another, okay, that permit or prevent what is happening right now from happening. And we have taken many of those natural craven checks and balances away even before we get to the higher meta spiritual stuff. And so we just have to recognize a simple truth. Bullies never stop until you stop them. The only thing that has ever stopped a bully in the history of this world is the sight, taste, and smell of his own blood, okay, metaphorically speaking. We are going to have to punch back. We are going to have to say, put it in, you know, typical meme parlance, not today, Satan. That is what we're going to have to do. That is going to have to be our mindset. The school board's not going to stop showing gay porn to your kids by themselves. The judges aren't going to just stop. The demonic ramblings called in-bank orders they're doing now, they're not going to just stop them themselves, okay? The View's not going to stop being insanity beamed into millions of affluent white women in the country who are stay-at-home moms every afternoon by themselves. They're not going to stop. Evil's not going to stop itself. We're going to have to stop it. And you're not going to be able to do that without it some form of confrontation, without some form of pushback, without alienating something or ruining some relationship or risking some job you probably hate anyway, all right? That's just where we're at. So time to get your hands dirty. Roll up the sleeves, put on the big boy pants. It's time to punch back.
And the last question for you.
Robbie Starbucks is he's punched back about 15 times. That's why they're swatting him.
It's so well said on all of this DEI stuff, and he's showing, and also why Doge and why they're coming after Elon Musk, because he's evidencing
Correct.
All of their corruption and fraud, and he's bringing it to light. And it's like, you know, opening Pandora's box and having all of this just nastiness come out into the light.
Can I ask you a question, Jenna, not to interrupt real quick? Can I just ask your audience
sure.
a question? Because again, I have so much respect for this organization that you represent on this show. And therefore, that transfers to the base of people it represents. Can I ask a simple question here? Okay, let's just pretend that Elon Musk and Donald Trump would never, ever listen to this show, ever, would never have a clue who any of us are. And can we just, as the priesthood of all believers, as the bride of Christ, can we just have a very blunt, simple, prophetic conversation for just a minute? Do you mind if I ask a simple question?
Go ahead.
Okay, here's something we need to ask ourselves. Why is it someone who denies the incarnation and has 14 kids from 77 baby mamas, why is it he's more of a threat to the spirit of the age than your pastor? Help me understand this. That's not the natural order of things. Why is a man married on his third marriage and he's not a three-time widow? Okay, who at age 78 is just now beginning to have humbling dialogues about his relationship with his creator? Why are they trying to shoot him and not your pastor? Anybody got an answer for this? That's not the way this is supposed to work, folks. You know why they're trying to kill Trump? You know why they're trying to destroy Musk? Because they're actually threats to our enemies that we're not. And the biggest problem that we have in this culture is no one wants to murder and arrest our pastors anymore. And until that changes, basically nothing else will.
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. And I appreciate your comments this morning, and we've got to go to break here. But I would just add to that, I mean, this is why when you fear man and you want to be liked and you want to have a big building and you want to have a slush fund and you want to have your best-selling book and all of this, you're not a threat to the culture. You are participating in it to the extent that you want the culture to like you and embrace you and accept you. The Apostle Paul said we are in this world, but we're not of it. And we need to be opposing evil at every turn so that, like the meme that Steve will recognize says, you know, you want to have Satan quaking in his boots when you get up and your feet hit the floor and have him say, oh no, she's awake again. This is not going to be a good day for evil. And we need to, as Christians, stand up, participate in the good fight, and secure some of these wins so that we will continue to promote the truth of the gospel of Christ. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. As we celebrate the many pro-life victories going forward, we rejoice. Preborn's network of clinics have a unique opportunity to advance even further without political persecution. But what does this look like? Preborn is the greatest threat to the abortion industry by rescuing on average 200 babies' lives a day, and they are putting a serious dent into the abortion holocaust. But there are still thousands of babies who are slain daily, and Preborn's goal is to rescue them all. With the help of the pro-life community, meaning you and me, we can save so many more. Please join us in saving all of these precious lives. The ultrasound is the game changer. Once a mother hears that precious heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. If you consider yourself pro-life, we need your help. One ultrasound is just $28. Five ultrasounds are $140. $5,000 sponsors ultrasounds for the entire Preborn network for an entire day. So how many lives can you save? Every child is a beautiful gift from God, so please join this cause. To donate securely, please dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back. So as we're talking about this whole issue of the runaway district courts on the federal level that are now stymieing or attempting to halt President Trump's executive action that is clearly within the scope of his presidential authority and within the authority of the immigration system. Governor DeSantis out of Florida has now recommended that as aspects of President Trump's agenda are being stymied by judges, he suggested that Congress could strip federal courts of jurisdiction. So this is what he said in a Wednesday post on X, and then Fox News reported it this way, quote, Congress has the authority to strip jurisdiction of the federal courts to decide these cases in the first place. The sabotaging of President Trump's agenda by, quote unquote, resistance judges was predictable. Why no jurisdiction stripping bills teed up at the onset of this Congress? Well, let's ask about that to one of my favorite people in Congress, Congressman Jim Jordan, who chairs the House Judiciary Committee and is an all-around stellar conservative and an advocate, of course, for President Trump's agenda. So, Congressman, is this the solution, or, you know, what's going on from Congress's purview?
Well, yeah, we've actually, Jenna, we've actually passed legislation out of the Judiciary Committee 2 weeks ago that begins to deal with this concern. And it says, you know, instead of having some federal district judge in Timbuktu, California, issue some injunction that applies nationally, we're saying, okay, if you're going to do that, then it should just apply to the parties of the case and in that respective jurisdiction and not have national implications, not apply to the entire country. So we think that makes sense. We pass out a committee. We'll look to, you know, move that through the process. And then we also think that everything else should be on the table, particularly you know, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court put out a statement yesterday where he said, you know, judges are typically not impeached unless it's, you know, some kind of criminal behavior on the part of the judge. The remedy for bad decisions is the appellate courts. And I understand that, and we get that. But I think when you look at this Judge Boasberg, it begins to look like this guy is acting in a political nature. Because, you know, his decision to say, turn the plane around, bring back the really bad guys who did really bad things, who are hardened criminals, part of a gang, and are in the country illegally, bring them back to the country. That may be the dumbest decision I've ever heard, and yet that's exactly what this judge said to the president of the United States, who controls the executive branch. The Article 2, Section 1, you know this as a lawyer, Jenna. Article 2, Section 1, first sentence says, power in the executive branch shall be vested in a president, not in judges. There's a separation of powers that we have. So we do think it, this Judge Boasberg may be in a little different situation, and we're going to look into that as we move forward.
Yeah, and that absolutely makes sense, and I'm right there with you in parsing what Chief Justice Roberts said about the lifetime tenure versus when there's a clearly politically motivated opinion. I just don't buy it from him that somehow, you know, there are no Obama versus Trump judges when you clearly have forum shopping by opponents of President Trump's agenda. Yeah. And I'm old enough, you're old enough to remember that when impeachment was on the table for President Trump twice, then the Democrats were out there screaming, well, this is quasi-political and we don't even need to have a legal basis for this. And they had a whole trial about it. And now suddenly when it comes to the judiciary, now Justice Roberts steps in. I mean, he was the one that presided over those two trials of Trump. And now he's suggesting this? That seems a little hypocritical in my view. What do you think?
And the president... Not only does he have, I think, not only do we have separation of powers and the executive branch, the president, I think, is totally following the Alien Enemies Act. It talks about predatory incursion. That's certainly what these guys, these Trinidadian gang members, that's certainly what they're about. So he has the Constitution on his side. He has the statute on his side. He's following the statute. And then I think just as importantly, it's not like this is a surprise. He campaigned on this issue. He said, if you elect me, I'm going to take bad guys who are in the country illegally, who've done bad things, and we're going to repatriate them back to their native country. So this is as clear as it gets. And for this judge to say, no, keep the bad guys here who aren't citizens of this country is crazy. It's just crazy policy. And then you couple that with the fact that this same judge is the one who was on the FISA court when the warrants were granted to Jim Comey, when Jim Comey used a document that was written by a foreigner, paid for by the Clinton campaign, who hired the law firm, who hired Fusion GPS, who hired that foreigner, Christopher Steele, who wrote this dossier that was garbage, and used that to go get the warrant. Judge Boasberg was part of that. When you couple all that, put all that together, it sure looks like this judge, this particular judge, is behaving in a purely political fashion out to get President Trump. And that's something I think is worthy of examination by the House Judiciary Committee.
Absolutely. And so your colleague, Congressman Brandon Gill, and then I know a few other members have signed on to co-sponsor articles of impeachment. Do you anticipate those coming before the Judiciary Committee imminently?
Well look, I just did a TV interview, and I said on there, like, everything's on the table. We're going to have hearings to look at what's going on with the judges who are doing the injunctions, with this particular Judge Boasberg. We're going to get the facts, get the evidence, and we're going to look at all this. And then, you know, we'll make a decision on what's the appropriate course of action. But what for me, it's like this Judge Boasberg, I agree with the Chief Justice that, you know, the typical remedy for bad judicial decisions is the appellate courts. But this one particular Judge Boasberg looks to me like it's political. And so we're going to give it a little more examination from the committee standpoint.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely the appropriate response. And I'm really grateful, Congressman Jordan, to hear you say that, because I think for too long, these, you know, mini presidents in black robes basically have tried to determine policy. And that's not at all the concept of judicial review. I mean, if you just take this one instance, for this judge to somehow say that he believes that immigration policy and deportation policy should be something different, and so is telling Trump over international waters. The plane is over international waters to turn around. I mean, it's just absurd and insane. But I mean, the even more threshold question of due process afforded to people who are here illegally. I mean, I personally, I don't care whether they're violent or not. If they're here illegally, why are we operating under the presumption that they're afforded the protections of the U.S. Constitution, which really should only be for citizens and people who are subject to our jurisdiction?
The only due process some of them are some people are entitled to is if they're making an asylum claim. And my understanding is a lot of the people who were on this flight, bad guys, part of this gang here illegally, a lot of them did have that adjudication process done. And they said, sorry, you can't stay. You don't qualify under our asylum laws. So there's that part of the decision, too, that makes no sense to me, because that took place. I don't know for all of them, but I know for many of them that was the case. So, yeah, you're exactly right. This is all part of what President Trump is doing with the Remain in Mexico policy, which is you wait in Mexico, now under President Trump, and you make your asylum claim there, and we'll evaluate it. You don't get into the country, and then 4 years later, we have some hearing, which is what the Biden administration did. No, no, no. We want you to wait. We're going to evaluate, because 84% of the time, the people who claim asylum don't qualify under the law. They're not entitled to come into this great country. But those who are, certainly we want to welcome them in. But that's why we have this Remain in Mexico policy. This is a different issue than the judge, but it's, I think, the right approach. And President Trump has now got that back in place.
Yeah, and it seems like these should not be the decisions that the judiciary is arbitrating anyway. I mean, these are things for Congress to legislate on, for the executive to determine, you know, other policy like Trump, the difference between Remain in Mexico versus Biden. And so this whole idea that somehow federal judges can make these determinations, I think is absurd. But I want to read you this this post from an account called The Law of Self-Defense. And this was just interesting to me, and I want to get your reaction, Congressman Jordan. He said, I don't know why nobody's listening to me on this, but I'll say it again louder. Impeachment is too high of a bar. You need 67 senators, and you don't have 67 senators for conviction, obviously. But right. Federal judges can also be removed from the bench for failing to serve during good behavior. Most of these activist judges are violating their own judicial branch code of conduct. That's a simple majority in the House and Senate, and you do have that. Obviously, Supreme Court justices don't have those same issues. We've had a whole debate around that, whether they should be bound by this, but certainly the district court level is. Is that accurate, that it's a simple majority in Congress to remove under that type of theory?
I would have to research that. I'm not familiar with that. I think you said it was a tweet or a post. We would have to research that to be able to give you an answer. It doesn't sound like that can function the way you described it or this person described it. But so I would just have to, I'd have to do some research to see. But my gut tells me it's not the case.
Yeah. And then that's, I mean, at least as far as I'm aware, and I just, you know, saw this post a little bit before we came on the broadcast here and thought, you know, that's interesting and probably somebody would be pursuing it. But in terms of the code of conduct, my understanding is that the judicial branch itself would enforce that through, you know, their own remedies in terms of the code of conduct.
Yeah, that's right. There's definitely, the ethics and everything else that you have in a separate and equal branch of government, the judicial branch, and that would be the ultimate arbiter. That would be the Supreme Court, and in particular, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
Right. And well, now we know where Robert stands on all of this. But in just the last minute or so I have with you, Congressman Jordan, you know, when we're talking about, you know, these three different branches of government, and we've seen how the left operates under Biden, where they didn't care that he just blatantly ignored clear law. And yet they want to turn around and impeach Trump for nothing and with no legal basis and for a phone call and all of this. I mean, clearly they're hypocritical at best on this. How does our country function when we have judges on the bench who are willing to make these types of decisions if there is no action that's taken and there's no real enforceable accountability? I mean, where do we go from here?
You just keep persevering. I mean, you adopt the attitude that President Trump had, the resilient, persistent, attitude that he has displayed now for 10 years with the left coming after him, and you just forge ahead and you go to the appellate courts, you do hearings to highlight it. I think in some ways, even Chief Justice Roberts' statement yesterday, the left is interpreting that, oh, this is a pushback on people talking about impeachment of judges for these decisions. I also think it's a brush back to the judiciary itself. Like, hey guys, do this right. Don't be operating. I think it's as much designed to send a message to the judiciary branch as it is to the legislative branch, where some members are talking about impeachment. So I just think you plow ahead, you keep doing the right thing like President Trump, and you go at it with the intensity and the focus and the pace that we've seen from the Trump administration these first 8 weeks, which is truly unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this, where a president comes in and his administration does what they said they were going to do, and they do it with the intensity and focus that we've witnessed. You just keep that up.
Yeah, so well said, and I really appreciate all of your efforts to keep up the fight, and we'll look forward to seeing how all of this progresses and the Judiciary Committee. So Congressman Jim Jordan, really appreciate it. Listeners can follow, of course, Representative Jim Jordan on X. I'd encourage you to do that, and we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, talking about the executive action that Trump wants to take to secure our borders and actually deport people that should not be here and who maybe have gotten the privilege of being here, but now should not. This is breaking from Bill Malusian of Fox News. Late last night, a DHS confirms to Fox News that ICE has arrested Badar Khan Suri, an Indian student at Georgetown who DHS claims has been spreading Hamas propaganda and has connections to a known or suspected terrorist who is a senior advisor to Hamas. DHS seeks to deport him via the same rarely used statute they're invoking with the Columbia student, Mehmed Khalil. DHS's statement to Fox, quote, Suri was a foreign exchange student at Georgetown University, actively spreading Hamas propaganda and promoting anti-Semitism on social media. Suri has close connections to a known or suspected terrorist who is a senior advisor to Hamas. The Secretary of State issued a determination on March 15, 2025, that Suri's activities and presence in the United States rendered him deportable under INA Section 237, and they go on to specify that section. And so, of course, Georgetown University is standing up for this student and suggesting that, you know, this is just all peaceable and it's all fine. And, you know, we have no idea how this could possibly be taking place. And isn't Trump terrible? So let's welcome in Scott Uhlinger, who's a former CIA officer, for his take. So, Scott, you know, these types of deportations, I mean, this is someone, we're not talking about somebody who entered illegally, at least according to what Fox News is reporting. He was here on a valid student visa, but those can be revoked. And when the Secretary of State is issuing this type of determination, this seems pretty straightforward to me.
Right, exactly. And I also want to point out, you know, when I was operating undercover in the CIA, I also worked on the consular line with State Department at, you know, at an embassy. So I'm well aware of a lot of this stuff. And I've done, you know, visa screening myself and always was involved in kind of with the consular affairs in various embassies. So, yes, exactly. This is absolutely within the bounds of the Secretary of State's power. And like you said, it's the policy is that if your presence there has potentially serious adverse effects on foreign policy, then that renders your visa, you know, you reneged on your agreement to come to the United States, and so now you're getting kicked out. And there's no question that that's correct, because that's not even getting into the fact that they're apparently associating with a known terrorist. So I don't care whether this person is studying, you know, their medical, dentistry, or forestry. If they're cavorting with terrorists and they're on a visa, no matter what kind of visa, whether it's a tourist visa or a student visa, then, you know, all bets are off, and you get to go back to the country you came from.
Yeah, and this seems, again, so straightforward that it's a privilege to have some to have these visas and to be here, whether, like you said, it's a tourist visa, it's a student visa, it's a work visa, whatever it is, that is a privilege to enter the United States legally, but it's under a contract. And, I mean, it's no different, really, if we analogize it to a landlord-tenant situation, that if you violate your lease, the landlord can come in and kick you out. And there are some forms of due process more than people, you know, who have entered illegally, and all of the deportations under this this U.S. district judge that's wanting to say, well, no, people who've entered illegally somehow get some aspect of due process. Well, no, they shouldn't, and they don't now in many cases, which is totally fine. But this seemed to go through due process because a determination was made, and yet the left is sitting here, you know, trying to champion that everybody should have access to the United States and should be able to stay regardless of anything that they are accused of or found to have actually been engaged in. I mean, there was a determination here. It wasn't like he was just snatched, as one Politico reporter posted on X. He said, hooded ICE agent snatched Indian-born Georgetown postdoc, as if, like, you know, this is coming in the night and this guy was just going to Whole Foods to get his groceries and, you know, had absolutely nothing going on with cavorting with terrorists. So the left is trying to make this out as something totally against our law. But really, this is just the Trump administration trying to finally enforce it.
Exactly. I mean, you're absolutely right. I guess the problem is you can see in this case and in, like, looking at a really big picture kind of thing, and look and our foreign policy thing, for example, J.D. Vance speaking, sternly lecturing Europe about the dangers of losses of freedom, things like that. What I'm saying is, like, we are conducting a foreign policy the way a country should be conducting it. It's just that we have lived, you and I, our entire lifetimes almost, and I'm 60. So, like, you know, so basically for the last 50 years, we have lived in a bizarro world where no standards are followed. And Uncle Sam becomes, as we used to say in the Navy, Uncle Sucker. We just, it's always our job to take the fall, to take the hit, to suck it up. And for once, a president like Trump and a secretary of state like Rubio are standing up for basically just what's in code. It's all within spec. It's all within the law. And people are outraged that basically suddenly we're enforcing things like jaywalking and all. But it's just because for 50 years, we have not, the United States has not done that. That suddenly everyone is shocked, like, for instance, with tariffs. You know, we find out with tariffs that, oh, well, by the way, you know, Canada is tariffing, you know, U.S. Dairy goods by a factor of 250%. But see, we sucked it up for so long, and because there was no one, even in the Republican Party, who was looking out for the American citizen, that suddenly when we want to enforce laws, everyone gets all outraged.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, I think Tom Homan said it so well when the left and the reporters were saying, well, you know, this is a really antiquated law and it's, you know, nobody's invoked it for 200 years. He said, well, the Constitution is over 250 years old and we still pay attention to that, right? I mean, just the,
right.
the
exactly.
absolutely stupid and bogus things that reporters are so pearl clutching about is utterly preposterous and ridiculous. Yet we have these judges that are trying to reinvent the law according to their policy preferences. And I really do hope that some of them are impeached and actually have to stand trial and defend themselves. But Scott Uhlinger, I want to turn to another story to get your take since I have you this morning. The headline this morning is Donald Trump pressures Iran to cut support to the Houthis. And so Daily Wire's reporting that President Trump warned the Islamic Republic of Iran on Wednesday to immediately cut off its support for the Islamic terrorist group in Yemen. And Donald Trump said Iran on Truth Social must stop the sending of these supplies immediately. Let them fight it out themselves. Either way, they lose. But this way, they lose quickly. Tremendous damage has been inflicted upon the Houthi barbarians. And watch how it will get progressively worse. It's not even a fair fight, and it never will be. They will be completely annihilated. So for listeners who aren't quite aware of this situation, because we've been focused on, you know, Ukraine and Russia and then, you know,
yeah,
Iran.
I'll talk about it. I've been on Arabic TV for the past week talking about this nonstop. Remember, see, what we have to remember is that the Houthis, which are a group, a terrorist group in Yemen, who, by the way, the UAE and Saudi Arabia were fighting under Obama. They were fighting them because they're a terrorist group. And, of course, the Obama administration started giving them a problem about that. And so they basically stopped arms exports and to Saudi. And basically those countries were prevented from continuing to eliminate the Houthi threat. So now let's fast forward to about 2 years ago. And the Houthis, just for kicks and because they support the people in Gaza, they decided to basically shut down the Red Sea by a combination of attacks, 140 attacks on world shipping, because when you go through the Suez Canal, you've got to go through the Red Sea and then out into, and then basically out like to, you know, across the Indian Ocean. But they basically shut that down. And because the Biden administration was so absolutely inept in dealing with this, they did shut it. They shut down basically 50% of world of shipping that normally went through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal, stopped doing it. And they went the long way around Africa, which adds about 80% more distance for those ships running. And so they basically, and there were two pinprick attacks on the Houthis under Biden. The last one was only a few months ago, but basically it wasn't enough to do anything. And the world voted with its feet, a vote of confidence with the U.S. Navy and Biden. They said, you know what, we don't trust you guys to keep us safe, so we're going to take the long way around Africa. So now, basically, after 2 years of this nonsense, the Trump administration rightly decided that this has got to stop. Literally, the modern United States Navy, because I say this as a retired 28-year Navy veteran, the U.S. Navy primarily was formed in around 1805 to deal with this threat, the threat of piracy, the Barbary Wars on the North African coast. And if there is no more clear-cut a mission than annihilating pirates, which are the enemies of humanity. And that is exactly what the Houthis are. So now we have an ongoing campaign to destroy the Houthis. And like I said, I probably can't think of another war in the last 20 years that has been more justified than what we're doing right now.
So President Trump, you know, has authorized these airstrikes, and it's a new campaign of intense airstrikes, according to the AP. That's how they're characterizing it. And yet, you know, some again on the left are suggesting, oh, well, this is targeting, you know, civilians, including children and all of this. And so, you know, I mean, what's the best response to this? Is Trump right?
It's a joke, but getting back to your previous question, so what about Iran and all this? Okay, Iran is supplying the stuff mostly by sea, and also this is an important part that hasn't been talked about that much. Iran has furnished the Houthis with intelligence because they had two intelligence vessels that were in the Red Sea, like spotting for the missile strikes. So imagine going through the Red Sea on a container ship. And you see this little ship like 2 miles away that you know is notifying the Houthis, okay, here's another target for you. And so basically, I think those ships are out of the region. But what Trump is doing with that tweet, and I think it's hilarious, is he is really putting the Iranians on notice. They're already on thin ice because he sent them a letter about 3 weeks or a month ago telling them that, look, you need to come to the table to talk about the nuclear stuff. But this is another way of assuring them that we mean what we say, because he's kind of threatened in that tweet or whatever, basically maritime retaliation. So what we can expect next is if the Iranians are stupid enough to try to ship more weapons into Yemen, those ships are going to be stopped or possibly sunk by the United States Navy. And I'll tell you the other thing. If Iran is stupid enough to put those intelligence-gathering targeting ships back in the Red Sea, I fully support that those ships need to be destroyed, because that is literally actively working against international shipping, freedom of navigation, and the very principles which the U.S. Navy was founded upon.
Yeah, well, so well said. And, you know, Trump can do all of these things simultaneously. And it's hilarious to me that, you know, people are condemning him for going and, you know, being on the golf course a couple of days, you know, out of the months when he's taking care of this. He's taking care of, you know, Putin and you know, Russia, Zelensky in Ukraine. He's focusing on the Middle East, meeting with Netanyahu. I mean, getting so much done that Biden couldn't do, you know, if you gave him another 10 years in the Oval. And yet, you know, Trump is being the leader on the world stage. So, Scott Uhlinger, we're already out of time, but I so appreciate your commentary. Look forward to having you on again soon as we continue to talk all about foreign policy and also what's going on with immigration here in the U.S. But as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.